Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Houston standing by, over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Hello, Houston. He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. We're Jeremy and Joe. Brian's around somewhere. Plenty to get to today, Monday edition of Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Lots of college football to get to. Lots of professional football to get to. Rockets played with their food a little bit yesterday, but won. The Rockets as well. Rocket power! And Texans won a football game. They're back to 500, Joe. Let's celebrate. Party time. The Texans are 500 on the year. What a time to be alive.
It's great to be mediocre.
It is.
500. Back to it. Congratulations to the Houston Texans.
The Texans are red hot, Joe. They've won 4 of their last 6 games.
They're playing well for the most part.
They won 5 of their last 7 games.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yep.
Why? I'm picking up on a negative tone. Full disclosure.
Come in with these down questions.
Yeah, I'm picking up on a negative tone from Joe. Full disclosure, I'm not in the studio today.
It's because you're not here with me. I miss you.
I'm remote, so this is the first time that Joe and I have literally talked today.
That's true.
Haven't seen him. We exchanged a few texts. I try to fit it in that 30-minute window that Joe allocates for preparation time. Sometimes I hit it, sometimes I don't. But this is the first time that we've actually talked today, and I'm detecting a negative tone from you, Joe.
No, there's no negative tone. The Texans won. It was kind of a snoozer, I would say.
That's negative.
It's not a bad thing to be a snoozer. Win,
yeah,
win.
It's when is it a good thing? When is a snoozer a positive term?
When you
You're
win.
Very negative today.
No, I'm not. They won. It's a good thing. It doesn't matter. It was
you
boring.
You always come in here with these down
boring.
Questions.
Boring. Negative word.
It was boring.
Again, negative. What's with the negativity, Joe? The Texans are 500. They're 5-5 on the year. They're a game out of the playoffs. They're tied with the Kansas City Chiefs. They are in the thick of the playoff race.
They are. They're back in it. They're going to pass Jacksonville.
Okay. That was positive.
You want more positive things?
Yeah, I want you to be positive today. This is a positive day.
Nico Collins is incredible.
Okay, that's positive.
Very positive.
How good is Nico Collins? We'll discuss maybe tomorrow. Uncle Jackie was sending me some hot takes yesterday. What's that?
How hot? Like,
I don't want to spoil it. It's a forward tease for tomorrow's Cash 'Em or Trash 'Em.
Okay.
Yeah, so make sure you're listening to Jeremy and Joe tomorrow specifically for Cash 'Em or Trash 'Em. What time? We don't know. We don't schedule things. We just fly by the seat of our pants around here. That's what we do. Yeah, let's see how negative you're going to be today, because I'm a little taken aback. Usually I'm the negative one, I think, of the two of us. I think that's fair to say. I would say I'm a realist. Some people take that realism as negativity, but it's you, Joe. You. That's being negative. See, my main takeaway with this one, Joe, is that wins in the NFL are not easy. Road wins are not easy. Winning with a backup quarterback on top of those things are not easy. I'm saluting a win for the Houston Texans, as a matter of fact.
Every win is a pretty win.
There we go. Every win's a pretty win, Joe.
Well, that I disagree
with. No ugliness.
Now, not pretty, but a win is a win. That's all that matters. I'm not trying to be negative. I think a bad start to the show. I'll be positive.
It's coming across a little negative.
I'll be positive now, I promise.
I don't need you to be one way or the other. I'm just surprised by the negativity. There's a very famous coach, one of the greatest coaches in his sport, that says that there's no such thing as an ugly win. It's like trying to put a bunion on Miss USA. Why would you do such a thing? You win a football game in the NFL, they're all measured the same, Joe. You put a 1 in the left side of the win column. You hang a win. It's better to be 5-5 than it is 4-6.
Well, it's not even close. I mean, you're like, the Texans' season's alive.
It's alive and well.
It doesn't matter how they got there. The season, there's real hope now that you've won the last 2 games. Because we talked
five
about this
of their last 7
on Friday. If they would have lost this game, it's over. Like, it wasn't technically a must win and all that stuff. Like, I'm with you there. But if you lose to the Titans, the season is cooked. No matter who your quarterback is, And they did enough yesterday to get the win. And it was, like, I thought Davis Mills was good in this game. He wasn't exceptional or anything like that, but he did everything you want your backup quarterback, for me, to do in this win over the Titans. Like, he was everything you could ask him to be in this one. He was a great backup quarterback for this.
Now, let's start there. What did you think of Davis Mills in the offense? You thought it was pretty good?
Yeah, I mean, it was, the easy stuff was good. Like, I felt like when he was, when it was very clear, you know, like when he would like set his feet and throw right away, whether it's to Nico or Schultz or like the first read, everything was moving really well for them. When it got complicated, it didn't go as well, but that's fine. Like, he's a backup quarterback for a reason. But they did a good job in the passing game, even though the points don't reflect it. I do think, like, the offense was good for the most part in yesterday's game. It wasn't exceptional or anything like that, but they moved the ball for the most part throughout the game, like, in chunk plays when they needed to. And that throw at the end on the 3rd and 16 was spectacular from Davis Mills.
Yeah, I thought that the offense was actually good. I know that the stats won't reflect that. Like, you scored 16 points. There was a lot of meat left on that bone. The Texans left a lot of points on the field. Like, 315 yards, no one's really writing home about that. But it's just, like, I see, sometimes this yardage stuff can be misconstrued. Do you know how many yards Jacoby Brissett threw for yesterday?
Like 290?
Almost double it.
He threw for over 450 yards. But it was the game script. They're behind the entire game. They're slinging the ball around the yard. Nobody's looking at Jacoby Brissett's game and be like, that was fantastic. They racked up over 500 yards of offense, probably. We're not looking at Arizona today as this offensive juggernaut. A lot of times, game scripts are more of an indicator of who's going to have a big yardage game.
Yeah, the yardage stuff, we're going to fix Jeremy's connection there. The yardage is definitely, is a statistic in which, like, offenses are often, like, judged on in the biggest way possible, but I think it's a great point. I didn't realize Jacoby Brissett threw for that many yards yesterday. That feels like a miss on my part. But, like, the Texans offense was good, to what Jeremy was saying, what I said too. They moved the ball well throughout most of the game. They didn't have the explosive plays, but they controlled the clock for a majority of this game. I thought the Texans' offense, in the passing game specifically, was very solid in this game. I was impressed with what Davis Mills did. I still think it's crazy that if you looked at last week and this week and say, hey, Davis Mills over C.J. Stroud, I think you're an insane person. That's fine if you want to be part of Mills Mafia still. But the offense in this game did enough. I think it's a good point by Jeremy, too. They left a lot of meat on the bone, but that's where I think you see more reflection of what we've seen this entire season, but very specifically in this game, that you didn't have your starting quarterback. Like, that to me is why, like, there were points that were left on the board there. So it was a good game for the Texans. They got the win. That's all that matters. Like Jeremy said, it's a good win. Try not to be negative, okay? 1970 says we are the Titans, the mighty, 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 mighty 1-9 Titans. Yeah, we'll talk about that throughout.
Tell them boys to tighten up.
What is that from, Brian?
From the rapper. Fan music video for the Titans.
That's right.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that one in a while.
Yeah, we don't get to use it very often.
Because
it's not as fun as Duval or the Colt guy.
So I measure offensive success based on how often you score. Is that fair?
Yes.
Like, I hate the yards per game, how many yards you're racking up. Like, that stuff obviously helps a bit, but I'd rather have an offense that scores at a 70% success rate and have less yards per game than an offense that scores at a 30% success rate and has more yards per game. Especially whenever you have the number one defense in the NFL. I think it's important to play complementary football. The Texans yesterday only had 10 real drives, which was kind of funny. Like, the first quarter, each team had one drive. The Texans got the ball back with like 50 seconds left in the first quarter. So we're seeing that in the NFL, where, like, teams usually have more time of possession, leads to fewer possessions per game, all of that. The Texans had what I consider 10 real drives yesterday. Well, why are you saying it that way, Branham? Because they also had the ball at the end of the second half whenever they just kind of, like, ran out the clock. So, like, I'm not counting that. So the Texans had 10 real drives yesterday, according to me. They were in position to score points on 6 of those drives. That's a pretty high success rate. Now, they didn't score on all 6 of those positions to score. One time they took a sack and had to punt. The other time they went for it, 4th and goal at the 2, took a sack, turned it over on downs. They kicked a lot of field goals yesterday instead of putting it in the end zone, which is another problem with the red zone offense. Don't ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. But if Davis Mills, and I know it's the Titans, and I know they stink. Their defensive line's not bad, though. if Davis Mills is putting you in position to score points on 6 of your 10 drives, I consider that a success. I consider that a win.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice to get a little more just so you didn't have to, at the end of the game, have to get that game-winning field goal and be able to just get, you know, one of those possessions that you mentioned, either not getting sacked and converting for a field goal there or obviously scoring for it when you go for and fourth down. So would have liked to have a little more success just because the hardest part about yesterday's game was you're asking your defense to be perfect. And now Cam Ward's not good, and either the Tennessee Titans in general.
Are we keeping a book right now? We ask.
Very much so. And then they got – what, they lost 2-3 receivers in yesterday's game, but you were still asking your defense to be perfect for 4 quarters, and they basically were. But yeah, the offense had a good day yesterday. I don't think there's really, at least from a passing standpoint, I don't think the running game was very effective. The numbers obviously reflect that, but it was a good day in the air. Like, they were finding chunk plays, you know, not consistently, but throughout the game. So yeah, it was a good day yesterday on the offense.
Yeah. Now, like Mills' play specifically, I thought there was a lot of good. I thought there was a couple of bad plays specifically. The throw that he made to Nico on that, was it Nico? The 3rd and 16 on the final drive?
Yeah.
On the sideline. The throw that he made to him was unbelievable. Like, that to me was the throw of the game. Cam Ward had a really good one on the their final possession that tied the game, where he got hit right as he threw that bomb down the left sideline, would have been the bottom of your screen. But the 3rd and 16 throw from Mills was fantastic. I thought that the throw he made to Hutchinson, the little floater on the opening drive, like, had to be quick triggered, had to get rid of it quickly. There was pressure that was coming. He had to get rid of the football. And then Hutchinson had a couple of steps, but a floater, dropped it right in the bucket. Like, Mills can sling it around a little bit. Now, there was 2 sacks that he took that I think are unforgivable, quite frankly. The 4th and goal at the 2, and look, I understand that Woody Marks missed an assignment there. What do I always say for quarterbacks? Quarterbacks have to have a plan for worst-case scenario. There is no incentive to take a sack 4th and goal at the 2. If it was 3rd and goal at the 2, yeah, you're taking your sack. You're not putting the football at risk by heaving it up into the end zone. But 4th and goal at the 2 and you have somebody in your face immediately, how are you not getting rid of that football?
Well, I think those, like, the 2 things you just went through, like the throws and then the sacks, like, that's why he's a backup quarterback. And like, it's because I agree, it's unforgivable. The one on 4th and 2 is, it just can't happen. You just throw it up there to one of your tall guys and hope that they come down with it. Because worst case, it's an incomplete pass, and they get the ball on the 2-yard line. What's the big deal there? Like, maybe they're dumb, and they pick it off, or maybe you get lucky and you catch it. Just throw it up in the end zone. Like, that's any quarterback that makes that throw at any level, honestly, from high school through the pros, that's an unforgivable play. You cannot have that. But that's why it shows he's a backup quarterback, because there's really, really good, and then there's some plays in yesterday's game that are bad. And it's... he did exactly what you wanted him to do as your backup. Now, maybe we'll have one more game with Davis Mills. We'll wait and see what the injury reports look like over the next 3 days before the game on Thursday. But he showed, I think, to me, like, why he's paid the way he is, but also why he's not the starter on any team in the NFL.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. And then the second sack that he took, the 3rd and 5 when the ball was at the Titans 28, this was a position they were in to score that they didn't get any points. And look, Ariante Ursary couldn't block Arden Key. I get it. But again, you have to have a plan for worst-case scenario. That's a ball where you plant it at the nearest receiver's feet, or you have a plan to throw it over the head of a receiver out of bounds, so where it's not intentional grounding, because that took you out of field goal range. Like, it cost you points. You took the sack. You ended up having to punt. Texter said he didn't like the punt. I mean, what do you want to do, though? It's like 4th and 15. Like, your defense is the strong part of your team. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I blame D'Amico for punting there, especially after he saw his team take a sack. But I thought it was a poor sack to take from Davis Mills. Davis Mills on the 4th and goal at the 2 cost you an opportunity to score on a heave, but more importantly, pinning the defense back deep inside the 2-yard line. And then the 3rd and 5 sack. I mean, he cost the Texans 3 points by taking the sack.
Yeah, it could have cost you the game. Like, that one sack could have been the end of the game. I mean, well, I guess really both plays, not converting any. Like, you needed 3 points on one of those 2 possessions at least. And now, I think it was. Did you like the decision to go for it on the 4th and 2?
Yeah,
I agree. Like, it's, and even though you've been bad at it all year, it's the right decision to go for it there. You don't need to kick a field goal on that point because you expect your quarterback to, at worst, just throw the ball away. But he did the worst of all things and took that sack.
And look, I mean, even putting it between the uprights, like, the Titans have the ball at the 2. Like, good luck, Tennessee.
Yep.
Like, this is the number one defense in the NFL. You're starting first and 10 inside your 2-yard line. I dare you to go score. And look, I understand that they still had it like at the 12, and it's still like, you know, poor field position, but it's a little bit of a cushion. It's way better than first and 10 from the 2. And look, Tennessee scored on that drive. Now, you kept them alive, a couple of penalties, and the Titans were like able to go down the field and all of that. But I thought it was a poor decision by Davis. I didn't mind them going for it. You know, maybe you can be critical of the play call. Like, one way to not take a sack on fourth and goal at the 2 is don't throw the ball. But I also don't trust the Texans to get any sort of push against that Titans defensive line. And I think it was proved in the stats when you look at the Texans' yards per carry. Like, good luck running the ball against Tennessee. Like, you're playing right into their strength, right into your weakness. So I didn't mind passing the ball there either.
No, I wouldn't run the ball in that situation. You can't run the ball. Even when, like, you're fully healthy. I mean, I guess C.J. Stroud's not a huge factor in this, but they've been terrible at running the ball in short yardage situations all year. And how many times have we talked about on this show about how they keep trying to run the ball on fourth and one and fourth and two, and they can't accomplish it? I think it's absolutely the right decision to throw it at this point for the Houston Texans on a short yardage situation.
Yeah.
I just think they have a way better chance of having success in that moment in the air than on the ground.
And if you're gonna run it, I think it needs to be some sort of outside run. Like, you're not gonna be able to run it up the middle.
Yeah,
against
like we saw last week.
I probably, if you give me hindsight, 2020 revisionist history, I would have ran the ball there something outside. That's what I would have done. Because even if you get stuffed, okay, Tennessee starts the ball, first and 10 at the 2. Texter says you don't go for it fourth and 2, know your team. I disagree. Because even if you pin them back deep, I think that's a win. Okay, 713-780-3776. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Busy show. We'll get to Rocket Power a little bit later. Top college football stuff. Who had the biggest win in college football this week? Who had the biggest win in professional football this week? But when we come back, so people are talking about Stroud. What do you think the chances are C.J. Stroud plays on Thursday? Get your thoughts to 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitter at ESPN975. Joe's at Joe George Radio. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's Jeremy and Joe on ESPN975 and ESPN925. First, a moment, though, on Pro Dunk Hoops. They make the best basketball goal you'll find. Look, this is the season. We've had some really good basketball around these parts for the last several weeks, and you're probably jonesing to play some ball. Maybe your significant other's jonesing. Maybe your kids are jonesing. Maybe your kids play basketball for their high school, middle school team, AAU. Whatever the case may be, they want a goal. And if you're going to get a goal, you need to get one from Pro Dunk. Don't waste your time in the big box stores. Get one from Pro Dunk. Why? Because they make the highest quality basketball goal you'll find. Tempered glass backboard. Gives you a true, authentic feel off the backboard. It's also got a breakaway rim. Why do I need a breakaway rim? Because it's height adjustable. Anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. You can throw down some jams. You can raise it up to 10 feet regulation. Work on your shot. Whatever you want to do. Stainless steel hardware. It's rust proof, which is must have in Houston with our humidity. They got the extended overhang, so you don't have to worry about rolling your ankle in the basketball stanchion, which is huge for people who have weak ankles. I'm telling you that for a friend. Also, their accessories are next level. LED light kits for night play. It gets dark early now. You might have noticed. LED light kits, you don't have to put the basketball down, though. Backstop nets, you don't have to chase after the basketball. Pull pad lettering and lots more. And you can order all of this, including professional insulation, online at ProDunk.com. Yes, the pros from ProDunk professionally install your goal. Perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do it. Let the pros do that work for you. And right now, if you call ProDunk and mention hearing this ad on ESPN 97.5, you're going to receive the Lightning Adjust drill-powered height adjustment feature for free. Did you know this is a $249 value? And because you're a junkie, they're giving it to you for free. How about that? Installed for free, too, so you don't screw it up. It helps you raise and lower the goal 10 times faster with no effort. Take advantage of this now. Call ProDunk at 281-351-9822, 281-351-9822, or visit them online at ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
He's Joe, I'm Jeremy. Junkie, what are the odds CJ plays on Thursday? Wait till y'all find out Stroud takes more unnecessary long snacks than any, sacks than any quarterback in the NFL. I think that's a fair criticism of Stroud, but I think he was way better at that in the previous six quarters before he got concussed. I think he made tremendous strides in that area.
I agree. I think it's something that has plagued him since he was a rookie. I think like we focus so much on the offensive line that I think CJ has gotten a pass at times for the sacks that he takes, but it's still in the moment like those were egregious, like in the game situation. Like it's one thing to take a bad sack, but to take one on fourth and two, to take one, you know, later in the game on third and five that takes you out of field goal range, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. Like, you're getting criticized severely for that.
And, like, I'm very critical of Stroud when he takes poor sacks, too. I hate taking poor sacks. I think Stroud took one in a similar situation. I can't remember if it was fourth and goal, but it might have been a two-point conversion where he took a sack. And it's like, what are you doing, man? Junkie, I thought for a while Stroud is soft.
Junkie.
That's why they don't sneak the ball. Probably won't play. You think Stroud is soft? 713-780-3776. Is he a soft boy?
I don't think so.
I don't think he's soft. I think he's emotional.
He gets hit pretty hard. Yeah, he's emotional.
Yeah, I don't think he's soft. I think he's I don't think they quarterback sneak a lot. Like they've quarterback sneaked with CJ Stroud. There's some games where they don't because they don't trust their offensive line against the opponent's defensive line. I don't think that's a fair criticism there, Junkie. But I respect
Junkie.
It nonetheless. Another Junkie, any timeline on Fairbairn coming back? DeMeco mentioned today in his press conference that they expect Kaimi to come back. They said Petrie and Stroud still in the concussion protocol. So there's your injury update, courtesy of DeMeco, courtesy of me.
Well, that's good that Kaimi is going to come back because then maybe you're not out of field goal range if Davis Mills takes that sack.
Is it good, though? Is it good? Like, Matt Wright got a game ball yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he did, but Kaimi probably would have made those kicks, too, and also got one.
I mean, Kaimi's not great outdoors. He's not great in long field goals. I'm just kidding. I mean,
kicker controversy?
Who is K1 for the Houston Texans? 713-780-3776.
I don't think anyone has ever said who is K1 before. I don't know if I ever want to hear it again, but thank you.
Why not? What's the difference?
I just don't want to be having like breakdown discussions like if they move on from Kaimi at some point. Like, who's K1 coming out of
Kaimi?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Kaimi.
Who do you want K1 to be?
Kaimi.
Matt Wright got a game ball yesterday, Joe.
He did. He made his kicks. Congratulations.
Wasn't K1 like some sort of like kickboxing or mixed martial arts thing?
I think so.
Like, didn't like Bob Sapp fight for K1 maybe? Yes.
I don't know, but it sounds like it sounds
you remember
right.
Bob Sapp?
No.
He was a massive human being.
Oh yeah, he was a massive man. Yeah, K1 was it's like a blend of kickboxing and MMA, right? I don't know if I'm remembering that right, but it sounds right.
Yeah, I think so. Junkie, he's definitely soft, talking about Stroud. If Stroud takes unnecessary sacks and Davis Mills takes unnecessary sacks, and we agree that they should have some sort of bailout plan and obviously did not, is it fair to question Jerod Johnson and how much more he has to offer this team in the development of Stroud? I don't like the guy. Why are you taking shots at Jerod Johnson?
That was aggressive.
What? Jerod Johnson? I mean, I wouldn't put the blame on the quarterback coach. That's an offensive coordinator thing. He's the CEO of the offense. He's the one that's supposed to have checkdowns. He's the one that's supposed to have worst-case scenario. You don't put that on the quarterback coach. I will say this, Joe. You probably read this article, being a Chicago Bear fan, and the Caleb Williams thing the other day. Mm-hmm. Did you see the piece about the greatest college quarterback statistically of all time? I'm not the only one saying it. The Athletic literally said it last week. Talked about how important Case Keenum has been to the Chicago Bears. How important he's been to Caleb Williams. How important Case Keenum has been to even Ben Johnson, head coach of the Chicago Bears. How important Case Keenum was in the rookie season of C.J. Stroud. Case Keenum might be the greatest quarterback of all time, indirectly.
Case Keenum for OC to replace Nick Haley? Who says no?
The moment that he retires, he's going to have 100,000 coaches banging on his door, asking him to be a coach on their staff.
That's all he's doing this year. He's just coaching.
Yeah. Honestly,
he wears pads, but he's coaching. Yeah.
That's one of the worst secrets, though, in football, is like these backup quarterbacks, especially the third-string quarterbacks, they're either an additional coach or they're a developmental QB. They're like one of the two.
And a developmental quarterback who will never play.
Usually.
Mostly.
Usually. Like, you don't have a – like, and then you have, like, maybe your backup that if you need it, if you need him for a couple of games, then it's Davis Mills. But Gerard Johnson's the salt of the earth. What are we doing here?
Yeah, that's a shot right there. There's some real high school football anger, it feels like, come through that text.
Right? Yeah. Who'd you play for? Kingwood and Gerard Johnson at Humble High School? Beat your brains in? The Battle of the San Jacinto River? Red zone offense still an issue? Yep, it is. We won't ignore that. We won't ignore that in victory. Well, we wouldn't in defeat. Does Stroud have enough cachet to replace Mills if Texans are 3-0 in his starts? Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Yes. Davis Mills has been fine. He has not been good.
Yeah, I don't think you needed to say I think so there. There's no possibility that Stroud wouldn't take right back over.
Yeah. I have real concerns. If the Texans win on Thursday, awesome. If Stroud clears protocol and is not starting the following week, I got concerns.
Yeah, Mills does a solid job, but Stroud's just the superior talent. He's just better. I blame the quarterback coach because when my quarterback is pouting on the bench, the last thing I want to see is my quarterback coach doing the same thing next to him. Gerard Johnson's never pouted in his life, ever. He has never once pouted in his entire life, ever. 713-780-3776, HRMP listener line. Why do we have Gerard Johnson slander going on in the program now?
People are upset with him. I don't know why.
Yeah.
They're blaming Mills. Gerard for all the problems.
Backup quarterback is 2-0. Why aren't we giving him praise?
Exactly. It should be like, hey, he's doing a great job as the quarterback coach, getting him ready for, getting ready for the games.
He had Davis Mills prepped and ready to go, and he's 2-0.
He's a great quarterback coach.
Unbelievable. All right, 713-780-3776. Did you like the offensive line that started yesterday's game? And what is your change when Ed Ingram comes back? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Affordability right now, it's the biggest problem in today's car market. New vehicles, they average nearly $48,000, and most people's wages, they just have not kept up as car prices are going up. That's why some people, they're stuck with those seven-year loans where you're upside down on your payments, you have negative equity, and just you're ready to get rid of this car, but you can't because you still owe money on it. But your car's not worth that anymore. D&M Leasing, they solve all of those problems with the Easy Lease. They offer lower monthly payments, no money down, in terms that make sense. All you have to do is go to dmautoleasing.com, or you can just call 713-290-1000, and you have no payments until 2026. You fill out your information, a leasing agent will contact you, you'll work with one person the entire time, and you will get in your car, as long as you know what you want, within 24 to 72 hours. They'll bring that car right to you, that white glove service. That's what they provide at D&M Leasing. Check them out, dmautoleasing.com, or call 713-290-1000 for no payments until 2026, and tell them ESPN 97.5 sent you by.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
For the win, the kick right down Broadway through the heart of Nashville.
It's Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Chris Myers just oozing enthusiasm with that game-winning kick for game ball recipient Matt Wright as he lifted the Texans to victory. I'm not sure who is more excited, Chris Myers or Joe George, to start the show.
Definitely me.
About that Texans win.
You always come in here with these down questions.
Chris is a snoozer.
Yeah, he is.
I think that's what made the game feel even more boring.
Probably. It didn't help.
It doesn't help. Like announcers don't – I don't think they really affect the game in a positive way.
Oh, I disagree.
But I think they can take the game away.
Totally disagree.
In a negative way.
Well, if one can take away a game in a negative way, isn't there an equal and opposite reaction?
No, because I just don't want to realize. Like, I mean, it's like an offensive line. Like, I don't want to talk about you in special teams.
Hasn't Kevin Harlan or Joe Tessitore ever added to a game for you?
Yeah.
I mean, they add to the end of the game for sure.
When T-Mac yammed on Sean Bradley and he said, T-Mac just sucked the gravity right out of the building, that didn't give you goosebumps? That didn't add to the slam? It didn't magnify it and put emphasis on the gravity of the yam from T-Mac onto Sean Bradley?
It helps a little bit.
I think you're underrating it big time.
I think maybe it's just more like it's more of a distraction. Like, I think when Romo is ooing
Romo
it on.
Sucks.
Gus Johnson going way over the top, or Chris Myers putting.
So they're like
sleep.
Referees to you, like the best announcers. You shouldn't notice them.
Kind of, in a way.
Sounds like you're a fan of Joe Buck. Then
this is an insulting take.
I'm really sorry because I know who I'm working with.
I couldn't disagree more. I think there's an equal and opposite reaction. If Chris Myers is a negative 10, then somebody has to be a plus 10. Like if that's your stance on the bad ones, then the good ones have to have like the same. How do I want to say this? Like the same rating in the opposite way, right?
I think there's just like there's less announcers that like when I tune on a game, I'm excited to hear what they have to say. Like Greg Olsen to me is like the only guy right now, at least an NFL game,
man,
where I'm like,
I mean, Brady's pretty good now.
Yeah, I think Brady's solid.
He's like, growing on me.
Like I see what you're saying, Joe. Like there might not be like if it's a big game, you turn it on, you're not like, okay, I'm more excited because these guys are on the game. But I do think there are announcers who have like big game feel. Like whenever you do turn on the game, and it's like, you know, it's Keith Jackson back in the day. Who's the dude that was the CBS guy forever on SEC? Oh, the ESPN guy, and then he went to the Raiders for a little bit to be their radio. You're looking live.
Musburger.
Yeah,
Musburger. Like when Musburger was on the call, like. This is the primetime A-list game, and you know it. So that's why I disagree there. There are announcers that whenever they're on the game, I'm more excited for. Kevin Harlan's one of those guys to me.
Agreed.
Love it when Harlan's on the call.
McDonough for college football for me.
McDonough is very good. I like Joe Tess a lot on college football.
Love Joe Tess.
Didn't like him on Monday Night Football. It's the same way I feel about Fowler. I think Fowler gives a big time feel. Like I don't think that Fowler's like unbelievably great, but I just think that the gravitas of Chris Fowler makes it a big game. Like almost the elitist that is Chris Fowler, the guy who does like Wimbledon is doing this big time college football game. But I don't like him on Monday Night Football because he doesn't have that same gravitas.
Yeah.
Same thing with like Herbstreit. Like I think Herbstreit does a good job. Whenever he's on a college football game, okay, baby, this is a big one. This is the main event. When he does NFL, I'm like, this is the ho-hum Thursday night game. And maybe Michaels brings him down. I don't know. But I totally disagree with that take.
That's fine.
But I do think that Myers and Schlereth are my least favorite NFL broadcast. Of all the pairings,
I don't think I've heard them together before. I don't know if you guys had, but I've heard Chris Myers call tons of games over the years. But that specific pairing, I think that was the first time I had heard them together, and it definitely didn't help the game, the snooze fest, as Joe would call it. Like, they were very boring together.
I thought so.
They're above, or they're below our favorite Spiro Ditas.
They're at the very bottom for
Adam Archuleta?
Yes, for me.
I'd rather have Spiro than Chris Myers.
100%. At least Spiro put some he put some emphasis and some excitement to his calls, at least.
So I would prefer, but I prefer Stink over Archuleta.
Personally. Okay, that's fair. I don't have a huge
it's the bottom two pairs.
I'd rather have Spiro and his team on the call than in Archuleta than Myers and Schlereth. It's probably because Myers is just like. I feel like he's describing paint dry. Like, and look, I understand yesterday's game was a snooze, as Joe would say, boring, as Joe would say. I wouldn't say those negative things. He would, using his words, not mine. But Myers is just like he mailed in the game-winning call. Like this, like, I understand there are two below 500 teams entering the game, but this is a game-winning call in the NFL, and it's like right down Broadway.
Yeah, it's
ruin the Bluebird Cafe. Country music will never be the same.
It has like the beginning of the first quarter. Week 6 field goal vibe of a game that means nothing because both team seasons are already over.
Yeah.
That's how he called the game.
Yeah. Junkie says Ian Eagle's awesome. Great call. Ian Eagle's up there for me in any sport. Whenever he's doing football and he's doing basketball, I think he adds to the call.
Agreed.
And then now he's got JJ, so people in Houston like that. Junkie just make JJ Watt the full-time announcer.
I think JJ's pretty good.
I think he's going to be really good. I don't think he's there yet.
I think he's good for where he's at in his career.
Yeah, that's fair. He's a rookie.
Like, same with Brady. Like Brady's gotten better this year, but
Brady.
I thought it was bumpy at first, but I think it's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, agreed. Romo and Nance are a great pair. I don't like Romo.
Yep,
I've been out on Romo whenever people thought Romo was good. I was out on Romo before being out on Romo was good. John Smoltz is great at calling baseball games. Key from L.A. He has great insight most of the time. I think his delivery is kind of dull.
I like the other group better. And I know people don't really like A.J. Pierzynski.
I hate Pierzynski.
I like Pierzynski but more than Smoltz.
See, I can't stand Pierzynski. Pierzynski's my least favorite baseball color commentator.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Jeremy, you're in radio. Most people outside of the radio world don't give a who the announcer is. I mean, the text line's telling us differently. Maybe you don't care, but a lot of people do care. Plus, you're listening to us and not somebody else, so you care enough to make that decision. Ohio State game, Gus Johnson is the best. I don't really like Gus.
I've lost my appeal.
J.J. and Brady don't have great voices. Yeah, I could see that. I think Watt's got a better voice than Brady, though. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman hate Houston, never have anything to say. I don't think Buck hates Houston. Aikman may not. But I think they're good together. Maybe not for a Texans game, but I think that's a good team.
They're fine.
I think they're a good team. 713-780-3776. Go ahead.
Aikman seems to kind of hate everything, I feel like. Except for the guys. The guys he really likes them. And it's very obvious. The people he doesn't like, he is.
Do you want to throw those people into, like, buckets? Like, what type of people does Aikman like? What type of people does Aikman not like?
I don't think he likes the Texans. I would agree with the texter. I don't think he likes Caleb Williams. There's just certain quarterbacks he doesn't like.
We've heard that rumor about him.
Yeah.
Well, are you alluding to something, Joe, that you're not willing to say?
No.
713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Gary, you're in with Jeremy and Joe. What's up, Gary?
Hey, good evening. I make my twice a month call.
It's more than that.
commentating, good and bad. It is both, but it is necessary. I mean, even though, take for example, ESPN. When we're watching highlights, they're not at all those games, basketball, soccer, or whatever. But when you're watching ESPN, it's the ESPN announcers that are bringing that stuff to life. So I'm just talking about announcing and how important and impactful it is. And I know they're not at every venue, but they cover every venue that particular night. And so when they commentate and we're watching ESPN and reruns or what have you, it's exciting the way some of them can deliver it. I'm not saying everybody's great. I am talking about the importance and significance commentating and announcers are.
I think they are very important for the reason that
he's ever said.
Most people generate all their sports takes by what the announcers say. That's why I think they are important. No matter how good or bad you are, if the announcer doesn't like the way a player is playing, that is the talking point for that entire week.
Are you saying the mainstream media is morphing our opinions?
Not our opinions, but a lot of opinions, yes.
Okay. 713-780-3776. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Julian, you're in with Jeremy and Joe. What's up, man?
What's going on, gentlemen? We're talking about announcers. I think the announcers are important. I do think that they can elevate the game, but I also feel like they can drag it down. I forgot the guy's name, but everything is such a huge play. Oh, he makes a cut, and he gets hammered for a three-yard gain. It's like, bro, there's no need for that.
Yeah.
I understand you want to make it appealing, but I forget the announcer's name, Chris something or whatever. He's a popular announcer. A lot of people like him. But everything is a game seven game winner, and it just can't be that way. Y'all have a good day.
Appreciate it, Julian. I don't know what Chris. I thought it sounded to me like he was describing Gus.
That's why I think he was describing Gus.
Yeah, I think he was. Jim Nance would tell you to call a game like it's a story. You know, whenever you start the game, you can't be at your peak. You can't be at your apex, right? You have to work to it. It's kind of a dance. It's kind of a masterpiece. You got to have the apex moment when it's the apex. You can't have it at the start of the game. You can't have it on a second down and seven when the team's up by 10 and 10 minutes left to play in the second quarter. The gravity has to, be in the moment. I think the best, TV commentators, radio commentators are the ones that can feel the moment. And they know when to really sell the moment. Junkie, Jeremy, you disagree with everything. You know what? You're right. I do. I just agreed with you. I just agreed with you. That's interesting.
First thing you've agreed on all day.
That was like an inception moment there. This game has been turned upside down. Shame, shame, shame on you, Joe. That was a great call. That was old Joe Davis.
I like Joe Davis. I know a lot of people don't, but I like Joe Davis.
I hate that he's the Dodger guy. Dodger Joe Davis has a certain big game feel to him nowadays. That's true. Harlan is the GOAT. Joe Buck gets too much hate, says Eric the Buyer. Keith Jackson was the GOAT. How did Drew Brees do yesterday? I didn't watch the game. Neither did I. Was he any good? He took over for Mark Sanchez, huh?
Yeah, he did. Sanchez, bad take.
I didn't listen to Brees.
I don't even know what game he was on.
I don't either. I just hate the commentators doing the World Series when they go to the dugout asking a manager questions during the course of the game. I hate that too.
Yeah, that's not their fault, but it's one of the worst things happening in sports right now.
Yeah, I hate it.
Is the mid-game interviews, like, even like, I know it's ESPN, but like Sunday Night Baseball, you micing up a player, I think is terrible.
Agreed. Chris Collinsworth, one of my favorite. Do away with the sideline reporters regardless of the genders. I disagree with that. I'm not reading that one. It's like listening to Vince Scully. Vince Scully was the GOAT. I used to listen to Vince Scully growing up just because he was so good. Can we all agree Greg Olson is the most underrated commentator? I actually agree with that. I think Greg Olson's a bit overrated. I guess I disagree with it. I think he's a bit overrated.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like his voice.
That's fair.
It's high-pitchy and kind of nasally.
Yeah. If you don't like a voice, you don't like a voice. It's going to make you not like the broadcaster.
Like, I think he has good insight. I think he's a good analyst. But, like, I don't think he should be – like, a lot of people are like, oh, he shouldn't be demoted to the two chair. I'm like, I think that fits him better. Not to say that, like, he's worse than Brady. I'm kind of out on the voice a little bit. Like, he's this big macho NFL guy, and he kind of, you know, kind of high-pitched soprano-y a little bit. You know?
Spinal.
Yeah. Like Woody Marks. All right, 713-780-3776. Were you cool with the offensive line yesterday, Joe?
Yeah.
Starters?
Yeah, I was good with it.
Okay, what do you do when Ingram comes back? You going to make any changes? I mean, obviously he's going to have to start.
Can one of them play left tackle, either Brown or Howard?
So you're benching Ursary?
I don't know where else you put these. Like, how else you change it? Because I like the group you have out there.
Wow, that's spicy.
But like, if when Ingram comes back, if I feel like you want your best five out there, I think Trent Brown's included in that right now.
You might be right, but I wouldn't say that Ursary's out of it.
Who's going to play left guard? Like, I feel like
it's
more
like the Titus Howard answer.
I'm open to that. If they want to put Titus Howard at left guard, I'm good with that.
Ursary, Howard, Andrews, Ingram, Brown. Although Andrews was dreadful yesterday too.
Yeah, but it might help out Ursary a lot to have Howard at left guard. I think that to me is the answer. Okay. Is the most. But if they didn't want to put Titus at left guard for some reason, like, could you put Trent Brown at left tackle? But he's been good, but he hasn't been like a dominant player. Would it shock you if they just go back to the way it was before?
No. With the exception of Patterson at left guard?
Yeah.
Did it Lakin? No, yeah. It wouldn't surprise me at all. No. No.
But Trent Brown's played good enough to where it feels like he's part of your best group of five now. He hasn't been great, but he's been good for the most part. So I would prefer to have Howard at left guard, but if for some reason they didn't want to do that, I don't know how else you move this around without making a change at left tackle.
Wow, I can't believe you're calling for the benching of Ariante Ursary.
I feel like it just, I don't know, when he gets beat, man.
But he didn't have a great game yesterday.
He doesn't get beat easily. It's ugly when it happens.
Yeah.
He gets bullied when he gets beat.
I think you have two options. I think you go Ursary, left tackle, Patterson, left guard, Andrews, center, Ingram, right guard, Howard, right tackle, and Trent Brown takes a seat. Or you go Ursary, left tackle, Howard, left guard. I don't really care who plays centers between Andrews and Patterson. I imagine they'll just keep Andrews there because he's been the center all year. Ingram at right guard, Brent at right tackle, Brown at right tackle. That would be, I think, the two options that they have. I don't think they're going to bench Ursary. Like, this is Casario's prized offensive line rookie. They're not benching that dude. It's like Cam Smith.
Yeah, you kind of have to play him at this point.
Yeah, to me, he's not moving. He didn't have a good game yesterday, though, to your point. I think that's fair criticism.
Yeah,
and victory, which
and who knows? And who knows if Titus could even play left tackle? Like, it's or has he done it in his career for more than...
Titus has, yeah.
Has he filled in for...
Yeah, I think whenever Laremy Tunsil got hurt that one year, Titus played left tackle.
I think when he had his thumb injury, I think it was.
And, like, he was pretty good down the stretch, too, whenever he got hurt. And people were wondering if they were going to just move on from Laremy sooner than they did and just play Titus at left tackle. Because I think left tackle was his natural position coming out of college.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, so, once played quarterback, Titus Hart.
That's true. But, yeah, so I think the most likely is they just go back to the way it was. And then...
So Brown's gone.
Yeah, Brown's gone, and he's just your swing tackle at that point, which is fine.
What?
Your swing tackle?
Okay.
What else would he be?
I don't know. I'm stupid. All right, 713-780-3776. We'll get your thoughts. Also, how about the defense? What did you think of the defensive performance? What did they tell us? How do you think they aligned with no Petrie, with no MJ Stewart? And we're eventually going to get into this D'Amico Ryan's game management stuff, too. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Monument Chevrolet, they're the best dealership in the Houston area. It's really without debate. That's why they've been in the business for 50 years, over 50 years. Monument Chevrolet is a pillar of the community. So if you're in the market for a new pre-owned vehicle, even a commercial vehicle, their commercial vehicle fleet is on point. But if you're in the market for any of these things, Monument Chevrolet is the place to go. Why? Because they're the dealer you can trust. Transparent. No hassle, get your car shopping done fast. Doesn't that sound nice? Unlike all of the other car buying experiences you've had where you don't know if you can trust the guy, you don't know about all these warranties, you don't know if you're being overcharged, you don't know if you're spending too much money, you don't know if the terms are great. You don't have to worry about that stuff at Monument Chevrolet because they are spectacular. Family feel at Monument Chevrolet. They have a friendly atmosphere because they hire great people. The great people and the friendly atmosphere leads to a great culture. It's palpable too. The moment you step foot on their lot, the moment you step into their showroom, you can feel it. You're going to get a fair deal, a transparent deal, and a no hassle deal. Doesn't that sound nice? Without wasting your time and aggravating stressful negotiations. No tricks, no time wasting, no hidden charges. If you've been waiting to upgrade your ride, your kids' ride, your commercial vehicle fleet, now is the time to do it at Monument Chevrolet. Check out their entire inventory, monumentchevrolet.com, or just go visit them in person, 225 at Bellway 8. They have a massive lot out there. You're going to love it at Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hey, Joe, I'm Jeremy. I don't like your voice, but think you're a great radio personality. Well, now I know you're lying. 713-780-3776. How about the defensive performance yesterday, Joe? Hold the Titans, just a juggernaut offense, to 13 points. You hold them to 229 yards. The Titans did get that last drive for a touchdown that tied the game. But the defensive performance, what did you think of D'Amico Ryan's troops?
Outside of one play, it was basically perfect. After the Will Anderson sack and strip and recovery, that's when it felt like they really turned it up. In terms of pressure, against Cam Ward, just watching the game, I haven't looked at the numbers just yet, but it didn't feel like they were getting to Cam very often, and that was probably by design for what the Titans were doing. But besides one big chunk play, they dominated the Titans.
Yeah, so I mean, they got four sacks. I mean, that's a pretty good day at the park.
But I think they mostly came late in the game. Because even on that 95-yard drive, the Titans were getting sacked, having penalties, and then just kept moving the ball forward because of penalties by the Texans or that one big play.
Yeah, but to your point, it was by design. Like, Titans are trying to get rid of the football quickly. Like, they know what the Texans possess. They know they need to get rid of the ball fast. A lot of times that's, what's going to prevent the sacks. Okay, let's throw a bunch of short passes, get rid of the ball quickly. We don't want our rookie quarterback getting hit. But overall, you ended up with four. Wasn't terrible there. I thought the defense was great. Like, you had the final drive, whatever. Like, this is the NFL. Teams are going to score against you. Now, you can bring up the point about, like, opportune times. The Texans have allowed the other teams to score. There have been a few of those, but I think it's kind of like one of those. You get so much pressure, it's eventually going to break, and this offense has put the defense in some really bad spots. I thought that they played really well. How about the defensive alignment? They went, mostly nickel, played a little bit of 4-3. I thought what was interesting is that MJ Stewart was hurt. Petrie was hurt too. That Eric Murray never left the field. He never left the field. Or Miles Bryant, rather. I don't know. I'm all over these safeties. Miles Bryant never left the field. Whenever they played 4-3, he was your second safety next to Kalen Bullock. Whenever they were in nickel, he slid down to the nickel corner, and then they brought in Jalen Mills to be the safety. What did you think of the strategy there defensively?
I mean, for a guy that was on the practice squad a couple weeks ago, they sure liked Miles Bryant in this game. to never take him off the field, like to have that much faith in him. I guess it's by force at this point, but you know, this is kind of like almost like what we're talking about with the refs. In a way, I felt like I didn't really notice it, and I think that's a positive. You know, like didn't feel like watching the game. It's like, oh, there's Miles Bryant making a mistake, or here's a missed tackle here. Like, I mean, he led the team in total tackles in this game, so I thought it's the right decision for at least this game. I don't know how it plays out on Thursday if Jalen Petrie is going to be out since he's still in the concussion protocol, but for this game, it was totally fine. I think that's what we kind of talked about on Friday. Like, you can get by against the Titans with this crop of players in your secondary. And they did a fine job outside of really just one bad play.
Yeah, I don't think that – what bad play are you talking about? The deep bomb?
Yeah, the deep bomb, yeah.
I mean, I think that was just a great play by Cam Ward.
I mean, it was tough to defend. Yeah, well, was it Bullock was the nearest guy?
Bullock, Joe.
Bullock, yeah, I know. My bad. We just went over this on Friday, too. That's disappointing.
Let's get it
in
right.
Myself. Bullock, whenever he's near a play and there's a big chunk play, I just kind of assume it's his fault. I don't know if that's fair or not, but that's the way I view it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to tip your cap, I think. No, I think this is the defensive alignment that's fine with the injuries. I mean, obviously you want Jalen Petrie back as soon as you can. It's very obvious they didn't like Tremont Smith and what they saw on film from him, because he played a decent amount in the week prior, and then yesterday he played one defensive snap, and I think he was in dime coverage, a dime formation. So, yeah, they didn't like what they saw from him. I like the way they used Miles Bryant. They kind of moved him around. And then, hey, whenever we're going to go nickel, hey, here you go, Jalen Mills. I forgot they had Jalen Mills, if I'm being completely honest. It's a pretty nice guy to have on the practice squad because he's not terrible at football. All right, D'Amico's game management, Joe. This has been something that I've pointed out several times that I have not liked. Even whenever D'Amico, like, first couple of years, I'm like, I don't know if I love this from D'Amico Ryans. I don't know if I love this game management from D'Amico Ryans. I think more people are starting to realize it. We talked earlier about the fourth and goal at the two. I think we both agree we would have went for it there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so nothing wrong there. Nothing to be critical about there. The next game management decision, fourth and one at the 25. You're up 10-6 with 12 minutes to play. Decided to kick a field goal here. What'd you make of that decision?
Well, this is – okay, so my issue here – and I guess it connects to the first one. I just feel like you should have the same decision on both of these. You know, it's like I get one's fourth and two at the goal. You decide to go for it. The other one's fourth and one at 25. And if you go for it, you just continue to eat clock, move the ball down the field, try to get a touchdown. Instead, you kick a field goal. There seems to be a level of inconsistency with his decision-making processes on fourth and short. And I don't like that. That's my biggest issue.
Yeah, I don't mind the inconsistencies. To me, it should be like gut and vibe, flow of the game, let the game speak to you.
Well, then I don't like how his gut feels.
Oh, how do you know? Okay. That's fine. Like, it's fair to have different gut feelings. Like, the Mike McDaniel thing yesterday, like, people are like, oh, statistically, this was the right thing to do. Okay, well, statistically, I think it's stupid. To me, I like to go based on game flow, how things are going, offensive line, defensive line, what you're seeing in the trenches. I think score matters a lot here. I think I would have went for it, actually, though. 10-6 game, field goal, yes, it increases the lead. It makes it a, you know, 7-point lead. You feel really strong about your defense, all of that. It's still a one possession game, though. I would have went for it, tried to make it a two possession game. Now, if you don't get it, it's a 4-point game, and then eventually Titans would have taken the lead. I personally would have went for this. Of the two, I feel differently about this one than the goal to go situation early in the game. I understand where D'Amico's coming from, and it's not like one that I feel like crazy about. I'm not like at a 10 where I'm like, that was so stupid. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a 60-40 feel, because I understand what he's doing. Like, your defense is great. The Titans haven't scored a touchdown all day. You feel like a touchdown lead is almost insurmountable. Kick the field goal, make it a 7-score game, get you. Wright had also missed a field goal earlier in the game. I know it didn't count because of the penalty. So it's like, I also don't really trust him from 42 that much. Like, you know, 80-20, I guess, for him to make it. I personally would have went for it there, but not dying on that hill. Now, the challenge on the Christian Kirk incompletion where he didn't survive the ground, I don't know I understand that D'Amico has people upstairs. D'Amico's like the head of the snake, so we blame D'Amico. The process here, I don't know what they're seeing in this process where they thought Christian Kirk possessed that football.
It's a, like, fireable offense.
I agree with you.
It is.
And we're not saying D'Amico. We're saying whoever's in charge of buzzing down. Because here was D'Amico today on the challenge process of the Christian Kirk challenge.
The one that we challenged there, of course, I mean, the guy didn't, looking back at it, we didn't complete the catch through it. We didn't survive the ground. So looking back at it, probably shouldn't have thrown it. But I feel like the guys saw something that I didn't see up top. And that's why, you know, in the first half there, it's not like we're losing it, lose a timeout. It's not as big of a deal as it would be, he says, say, in the second half when the timeouts are very critical.
All right, what did you make of that? We'll discuss that on the other side. Game management from D'Amico, 713-780-3776. I can defend D'Amico on one part of what he said, but I'm critical of something else that he said. 713-780-3776, Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. If you haven't heard about Higgins Boat Rum, well, it's about time you did. It's fantastic. Rum on a mission. Higgins Boat Rum is known as the Texas bourbon drinker's rum. It's why everybody loves it. It's bold, it's smooth, and then also it's steeped in history. It honors the greatest generation, perfect to sip neat, perfect on the rocks, perfect on a big rock. Higgins Boat Rum uses the Percedo craft technology that we've all learned about. We've all grown to love it. It makes it smoother, enhances the natural flavors and aromas while also removing all the harsh elements. All that stuff that makes you feel bad in the morning, well, that stuff is right on out of there because of the Percedo craft technology. Higgins Boat Rum is perfect for crafting your cocktails. Try your old-fashioned with it. I've been doing that lately. It's fantastic. Your Manhattan, the classics, really good there too. The Pina Colada, a Mai Tai, which the boys love. Cuba Libre. It's perfect with all of them. Higgins Boat Rum pays tribute to our military heritage. It's named after the iconic landing craft that turned the tide in World War II. Higgins Boat Rum donates 10% of profits, too, from every bottle to Camp Hope to support our veterans. So when you buy a bottle, whenever you pour a little bit of Higgins Boat Rum, you are honoring our veterans. Follow Higgins Boat Rum on all their social media accounts. You're going to get fabulous cocktail ideas, behind-the-scenes stories, live updates on Higgins Boat Rum where you can pick it up. A premium top-shelf rum at a great price. Get your bottle now, Total Wine in Baybrook, or at HigginsBoatRum.com. Makes for a perfect holiday gift, which because it ships to 48 states across the U.S. HigginsBoatRum.com to place that order now. Not just a drink, but a tribute.
ESPN 97.5.